This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 40. Coming up on today's show, David Bellavia's Medal of Honor, the Democrats debate, and another Democrat run for the border. All that and more on the way on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Welcome to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael Caputo, of course, and just back from a long trip, long road trip all week long last week. But it was a long week, I'll tell you. I actually started out last week, Monday through Wednesday, with David Bellavia, my very close friend who was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Trump in the White House at 3:30, I think it was, on Tuesday of last week. What a whirlwind trip that was. So many events, back to back to back. It was an amazing couple of days. In fact, you know, being able to spend time with your friend as he's being awarded the Medal of Honor and all of the initial ceremonies and circumstances that he goes through, it's probably the most interesting thing I've done in my lifetime. Perhaps not in my lifetime, certainly in my older years. I've been around a bit more than more when I was younger than lately. So if it's not the best, most interesting thing I've ever done, it's way up there, top five, you know. Let's just say I've got three kids and I've been married. So there's the four top ones right there, right? The birth and your wedding day. And number five is David Bellavia's Medal of Honor ceremony. So I got to go down, drove down from Buffalo. That's about 7 hours. I went down there with my New York State Assemblyman, David DiPietro, Republican candidate, is someone who's been mentioned as a candidate for New York 27, the congressional seat. David hasn't shown any interest in that, David DiPietro. And he's also a good friend of David Bellavia's, and also tried to recruit, one of the guys that tried to recruit President Trump as a gubernatorial candidate in 2013 and 14. But anyway, it was a real pleasure for Dave to come down. And we also drove down with Trish Turner, who is a Republican county chairwoman in the area where Canandaigua is, Ontario County, over in that direction, Victor, all of that. And she is quite influential in the new state Republican Party under Nick Langworthy, the new chairman. But she rode along with us. It was a lot of fun, you know, three people, pretty, you can imagine seven plus hours in a car with somebody. You're going to be telling some jokes and talking about things and, you know, speculating what you might see in the next couple of days. You know, the Tuesday was going to be White House and the Wednesday was going to be Pentagon. And, you know, the Medal of Honor, people call it the Congressional Medal of Honor. It's not the Congressional Medal of Honor. The real, you know, the name of it, as it is legally referred to in U.S. records, is the Medal of Honor. They call it the Congressional Medal of Honor because Congress gets involved in this a bit, but it is only the Medal of Honor. And, you know, the White House has David on Tuesday. Wednesday is the Pentagon. The Congress actually does nothing for the Medal of Honor except to some key members attend. But Tuesday morning, we woke up. I went downstairs to go outside, you know, get some exercise. And there's David and some members of his family, David Bellavia, the Medal of Honor nominee. And, you know, it was just mere hours before he was going to have the medal draped around his neck by the President of the United States. He's down there with his family, and he grabs me and he says, "Hey, we're going on a tour. We've got an extra seat in our bus. You should go with us." I said, "Sure, what the hell?" I ran upstairs, got DiPietro up, and Dave DiPietro and I went down, jumped on that bus, and sure enough, it was going to the Lincoln Memorial. Our tour guide was going to be the Secretary of Interior, Davidson, an interesting tour guide, the man, the highest in charge of all the monuments and I guess we were headed off to one of his favorites, the Lincoln Memorial. And what was great, was very interesting, is that we got into this bus, and just before we pulled out of the Pentagon City Marriott, or Sheraton it was, six or seven motorcycle police pulled out in front of us, and a couple of dark squad cars and such, and black cars, and then a couple of, you know, another set of motorcycles behind us, and they took us off from the Pentagon over to Washington, which is typically a 30-minute shot, especially at 8:30 in the morning. It was a peak of rush hour. But as we pulled out, we realized that they had parted the cars from the Pentagon all the way to the Lincoln Memorial. They were pulled over and stopped on the side of the bridge, on the side of 395, into the city, on the exits over to Lincoln Memorial, all the roundabouts and the bridges and such, completely pulled over. I guess that's what the president feels like, or foreign dignitaries, when they're moving from place to place. But that's how David Bellavia is being treated nowadays. Anywhere he goes, they part the traffic like the Red Sea. You know, even after the White House and Pentagon festivities last week, David has been on the road, you know, going to New York City to do media interviews and to visit with the Fire Department of New York and others, and going from place to place as our nation's newly appointed hero. Everywhere he goes, he gets this this motorcade now. It's very cool. I asked him when we were on the bus, you know, headed over to the Lincoln Memorial, where he's going to put all these cars and motorcycles at his house in Western New York. I think in the motorcade stops at the end of this first part of his tour. My guess is I think he's coming back on July 6th to Western New York after a solid couple of weeks on the road touring with the Pentagon, visiting military bases and throwing out the first pitch here and there, different baseball games, and doing a lot of fun stuff, a lot of pain in the ass stuff too. But the Lincoln Memorial, we went in there with Secretary Davidson and a small group, and he immediately took us straight up to the rooftop and showed us in a side of the Lincoln Memorial. We've all been there, and we know the history of it, all the historic things that have happened there. But I don't know how many people have actually been up on the roof. He took us up there. It was a winding, you know, this stairway that just kept going up and up and up. I mean, us old guys with bad knees were having a time of it. In fact, I took a spill up there on the rooftop. There's just a lot, you know, tiles, uneven tiles all around. Still a lot of renovation going on. Construction workers all over the place. But we got there, David and I and DiPietro and I and others were taking shots with our family, photos with our family. A great, beautiful view from the rooftop of the Lincoln Memorial down to the Washington Memorial. And then we all went back. We quick changed into our suits, went over to the White House to the Navy mess for lunch, me and a couple of buddies of mine, while the rest of the crowd with Bellavia, I think it's like 30 people in his entourage, were back in the hotel getting ready to jump on the bus. We actually grabbed an Uber and went over to the White House early for the presentation. We were able to have lunch privately beforehand with friends of mine from the White House staff. And that's a great time. You know, I brought my new literary agent, Jim Hornfisher, who's David Bellavia's agent actually as well, to lunch, as well as some other friends of mine. It was a great time. And then we, you know, got an interesting tour of the White House. I've been on a couple of them, several of them, as some have. But every one of them shows you something different. We were down in the fellow who took us on our tour, Jeff Freeland, a great guy from Western New York. He's now got a senior position in congressional relations over there in the White House. He took us, you know, showed us some of the cool things, like one of the few areas that was left visible where the British tried to burn down the White House. There are parts, even though it's been completely renovated, there are parts that still show the burn marks and the smoke marks. You know, Jeff Freeland, knowing that me and Carl Palladino and Dave DiPietro and Trish Turner and Jim Hornfisher were all interested in these historical things, he took us on a little-known history tour of the White House. Very cool. Noticed, by the way, that that Barron Trump has a soccer net, a soccer goal outside the East Wing when he kicks the ball into the net, right? So he misses it, and the ball hits the windows of congressional relations, White House congressional relations. So these guys are working along. Might explain why they're having a rocky relationship with the United States Congress, right? If they're being interrupted every 15 minutes or so by a nice hard shot from midfield. But the I'm in there in the White House with the rest of the crowd, probably 250 people, maybe 250 people in the room, the gold room, or whatever they call it there, where they do all these presentations. And Bella Villa comes marching in with the president. A great ceremony. At one point in time, you could tell there's a picture, a photo of it out circulating after the president had given the Medal of Honor to David. And the two of them were talking while the whole room was on its feet, you know, all the guys in 2-2 infantry, the ramrods hooting it up over there, all of David's unit, just uproarious applause, standing ovation. And the president and David were talking during that. And they got a great photo of it. You know, I'll try and put that up on my blog, my podcast. And but David told me what they were talking about up there. David said, you know, as the applause was going, he leaned over, kind of looked at the president. He said, "Hey, Mr. President, do you think I could bring my guys up here?" And the president, kind of with a big grin, kind of talking without moving his lips like you do when you're in front of a crowd, he says, "How many's that?" And David said, pretty much all of them. And then the president didn't know what he meant by all of them. He had just hosted the ramrods in the Oval Office with David. There's, my guess is, 15 or 20 of them in there. And the president said, "Well, maybe just 5 or 6 or something like that." And David looks out in the crowd and he gives them a signal of some sort into his army infantry unit. And these 10, 12 guys come piling up on the stage, far more than the president had approved, but David just played it like he hadn't heard him, right? They just piled up there. That was the first time, actually, in history that a Medal of Honor awardee had his entire unit with him on the stage after the presentation of the medal. That's the first time in history, which really struck me about David. You know, I've known David for a long time. He's very selfless, didn't like talking about the Medal of Honor. I knew he was nominated. I knew that it was going forward. And when he ran for Congress in 2012, I ran his campaign. And everywhere that David saw the Medal of Honor listed on campaign, you know, handouts and websites and et cetera, bios, he made me delete the Medal of Honor. He said, "Look, I've been nominated for the Medal of Honor, but the Silver Star is what I have, and I'm proud to have a Silver Star. They're trying to upgrade it to a Medal of Honor, but I prefer you just put Silver Star." He would scrub all of his campaign materials of the references to the Medal of Honor, which kind of explains a lot. You know, David ran for Congress in 2012 and almost won. We're served by the man who defeated him, Chris Collins, the Republican from Western New York, early endorser of Donald Trump, running for re-election, as far as we know, in 2020, and also fighting off some federal indictments. He got a rough time of it going on right now. But when he ran then, he didn't want the Medal of Honor mentioned then, and now that David has the Medal of Honor, people around Western New York are saying that David should run for New York 27. We don't know if Congressman Collins is going to run. He says he will. But they're saying David should run for Congress and that the Medal of Honor, you know, virtually assures it for him. And David actually tells me that he thinks the Medal of Honor disqualifies him for Congress, which I find interesting. For the public, it seems that it qualifies him, and for David, it says it disqualifies him. And the reason why is he believes that politics tarnishes the medal. It's our nation's highest honor. There, by definition, you know, politics have nothing to do with it. In fact, they're so very careful to make sure that politics never enters into the Medal of Honor process. And I think they, by and large, have made that have held that line through the history of the medal. I mean, I think it comes from as early as the 18th century, I believe. I mean, I think the first time that it was the badge of military merit is what they called it back in after the Revolutionary War, and the Medal of Honor, I think, is each one of the services, the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy, they all have their own Medal of Honor. David got the Army Medal of Honor, and it was introduced, I think, in the Navy first in 1861, and then the U.S. Army 1862. But it's a long lineage of great men, of heroes, and most of them are still so proud that they want to keep this away from politics. And David has been advised by living Medal of Honor recipients, many of whom, by the way, were at the White House for the presentation, seated all across in a row, directly across from me. There were six or seven of these gentlemen, all Vietnam-era aged men, perhaps some others, and some younger guys who were clearly from our Middle Eastern wars were there. And when David looks at them, he sees them. He's told me this, and you can see it on his face. He sees them as his aspiration to become them. They've served so honorably this vaunted position of the Medal of Honor recipient, that David wants to be like them, and he doesn't want to befoul everything that those men have done before him with politics. So maybe it disqualifies him. After the president hung the medal around David's neck, we had a nice reception in the White House that went on and on and on. We weren't drinking much, but there was beer being poured. The food, by the way, in the White House is still excellent. After all these years, the White House catering has always been top of the line from all my memory. Every meal I've had at the White House, even a reception with standing room only, heavy hors d'oeuvres, it was terrific, just terrific. But the one thing about these 2 days, that night we all kind of had, we had a party as well over at our friend's house. At Jimbo Hansen's house, a very close friend of Dave, a Fox News contributor. He had a party for David that night after. And the next day, we got up and went to the Pentagon, which was tremendous. I thought even more interesting than the White House, probably because I spent more time in the White House than in the Pentagon, even though I am a military veteran as well. I've only been there for presidential events when I was on campaign. But we were destined for the Pentagon on Wednesday. Our job, again, the motorcade, all the way, busload of people. David is already at the Pentagon. He had been through meetings all day long before we got there. We went to the Hall of Heroes where David was being inducted, all the way into the bowels of the Pentagon, a huge place. And I urge you to watch his entire speech. Search Bellavia Pentagon speech and it pops up on YouTube. 16 minutes. But it was probably the best speech I've ever witnessed. And I've written Dave's speeches, but I didn't have anything to do with this one. This is all Dave, probably with the help of the Pentagon. A tremendous speech. And I wanted you to hear one thing in particular. Again, this is David Bellavia standing in front of the most powerful group of military officers ever arrayed in my presence, and certainly in his honor. 5-star generals, 4-star generals, 3-star generals, men and women of every rank, Secretary of the Army, Sergeant Major of the Army, incredible men all in their own right, sitting there waiting for David Bellavia to speak. And the speech was talked about his appreciation for his brothers in arms and how when he thought about the war, he thought about each and every one of his men, and he recited each of their names. Each of them talked about each of them, all of them. You got to watch it. This badass, this guy was, was a tough guy. And just how these guys and the brute force, the strength, the intellect that they brought to the battlefield. He talked about each and every one of them. I met several of them in these days. And he spent his 16-minute speech more than 75% of it talking about his men by name. And then he comes up with this.
And the threats to our nations, they don't sleep. They're watching our every move. Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, ISIS, Al-Qaeda. They may be watching this right now. Our military should not be mistaken for a cable news gabfest show. We don't care what you look like. We don't care who you voted for, who you worship, what you worship, who you love. It doesn't matter if your dad left you millions when he died or if you knew who your father was. We have been honed into a machine of lethal moving parts that you would be wise to avoid if you know what's good for you. We will not be intimidated. We will not back down. We've seen war. We don't want war. But if you want war with the United States of America, there's one thing I can promise you, so help me God. Someone else will raise your sons and daughters.
Isn't that amazing? That has to be the strongest line I've ever heard come from a man's mouth in front of a microphone, speaking words that were intended for millions and millions of people to hear. An amazing statement, I think. I mean, we all talk like that when we were in the military. This is, you know, we were proud of the United States Army and spoke of it with real reverence. But those words, I mean, David was so strong. We've seen war. We don't want war. But if you want war with the United States of America, there's one thing I can promise you, so help me God. Someone else will raise your sons and daughters. David's serious, too. I know David well. We've had long, long talks about patriotism, our country, our families, everything. He means every word of that, my friends. And I don't know what he's going to do now. I'd like him to run for Congress. I don't know what he's going to do now. But he gave us 2 days, 2.5 days of just absolute amazement from the White House, from the Lincoln Memorial to the White House to the Pentagon, to staying up late at night to drink with the men of the Tutu, the Ramrods. What a great group of men. Boy, the things people do at war, the things people do to save each other. As David said, they do it out of love. I sure as hell loved those days with the Medal of Honor entourage for David Bellavia. What a great and an amazing thing to be a part of. And now he's off to do his own thing. And I'm going to be right back after this, okay? Here on Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Remember, that's stillstandingpodcast.com. Still standing.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Hi, thanks for sticking around for Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm Michael, of course. Yeah, I'm glad I got a chance to tell you a little bit about the Medal of Honor festivities. It was really quite something. Of course, I felt immediately like I didn't want anything to do with politics at all. I was being asked to join CNN and Fox and MSNBC shows and radio shows. And after being in this rather pure environment, I mean pure, as an Army veteran myself, an infantry veteran myself, being around all these military men who are above politics, and I don't care what anyone says, the goal of all military men is not to be infected with the pestilence of politics. One of the reasons why people leave the military before they become a field grade officer is because, or a flag officer even, is because they don't want to deal with the politics that inevitably comes with leadership. But through the military experience, you know, the Medal of Honor experience, it was really clear to me that it was, they were trying so hard to keep it pure, to keep it away from politics. And I still messed around a bit here and there, touring around the White House, took a picture of my friend in front of the Hillary Clinton painting. He wasn't making a bad gesture or anything, but I couldn't help but take that photo. I didn't want to talk about politics. I didn't want to even look at politics. Certainly didn't want to watch the Democratic debate, but I couldn't help but do that. even though I mean, I was asked to be on TV the morning after, the night after, etc., different panels and such, and just wasn't up for it. You know, I knew I was going to be hanging around with the 2-2 guys, the Ramrods out of David's unit. I didn't want to burn that time by, like, you know, jumping in a car and having to go to a CNN studio to analyze a debate that I wouldn't have watched all that much, as I had had drinks with the Ramrods, right? I just called it off. I said, no, I'm not doing it. Not interested. Why not? I'm not watching the debates, I said. Of course, I did watch most of the first debate, which I found to be an absolute, yawner of an event. Almost no news was made in that event. You know, basically 10 debating each day, 2 days. You know, a mixture of high value targets and people who aren't breaking 0%. The first day wasn't all that good, but man, I'll tell you, I saw Kamala Harris pull herself out of obscurity in the second one. I thought that she showed that Bernie, for example, wasn't much of a, I mean, he didn't do badly, but Biden, Kamala just absolutely took Biden apart, I thought, and did it in a way that wasn't disrespectful. It was very issue laden. Of course, these are, you know, social justice warrior issues. You know, you offended me with, you know, because you worked with segregationists. I don't think that really there's any recognition today that Joe Biden is some kind of a racist. What Kamala Harris was talking about, I think, was the generational divide between those of her generation and younger, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Joe Biden's kind of generation, as Swalwell, who I despise, Representative Swalwell said from the stage, you know, Biden needed to pass the torch to younger people. And even though he said it and said that, you know, quoted Joe Biden actually saying it, and it was clever, the one who made the point, you know, who showed America the point was Kamala Harris. Of course, as soon as the debate was over, there were people out there complaining about, you know, microphones turned off for Andrew Yang and this author, Williamson, whatever her name is, Moonbat. Marianne Williamson, Marianne, I she's not qualified to be president, and I think she's kind of batty in some of what she does, you know, in comparison to her colleagues, but she's the interesting one. I mean, come on, let's face it. You've got a couple of dozen people leaning as left as they can, as fast as they can, and saying the craziest stuff, like raising all raise your hand if you think that illegal aliens should get free health care, and they all raise their hand. Marianne Williamson, at least, she's interesting. Anyway. Buttigieg did well, but I mean, I think Kamala Harris came out of there looking really tough. And by the way, the seal is broken on Joe Biden. Kamala took the gloves off and swatted at him. And by the way, didn't back off of it after her debate performance. So we know that the seal is broken on Joe Biden. It's a free-for-all for him right now. If you're Joe Biden, your best day, as usual, for a vice president running for president, the best day of your campaign is the first day. Now they're just going to be scratching the skin, just ripping the bark off of Joe Biden as they go along and using him as a springboard to show their own abilities. I was also, by the way, taken back, you know, by Beto O'Rourke and Cory Booker feeling the compulsion to speak their second language or third language, Spanish. I know that they're after the Hispanic voter. There's no question. Obviously, the Democrats need that. But what's interesting, actually, I don't know if you noticed this, but coming out of that debate, after the debates, it was interesting to note that Harris, Kamala Harris and Julian Castro are the two that are running away with Hispanic support. It used to be Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders before the debate, But because of their performances, Castro and Harris, they absolutely supplanted Biden and Sanders among Hispanic voters. According to a survey that was done by Univision, which is the premier television network for Spanish language viewers, after the first Democratic debate, 22% of Latinos interviewed said Harris is their favorite. And that's a big change. In a Univision News poll prior to the debate, only 6% said that they liked Kamala Harris, the California senator. That's a 16 percentage point swing in a prime demographic of Hispanics. And, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, people are yapping about whether she's African-American or Caribbean, whatever. I mean, I think that's, of course, a ridiculous rabbit hole to crawl down into. But, I mean, Kamala Harris, wherever she's from, is running away with the Hispanic vote. And Castro, who he came in third place with 9% of the preference of Hispanics in the pre-debate survey. He came from 9% to 18% into the second place. And again, a 9-point swing. That's a pretty big deal. So Biden lost 5% in that poll, and Sanders dropped 4%, and O'Rourke dropped 2%, and completely supplanted by Kamala Harris and Julian Castro. That's remarkable. And it's the things like that that I look at. And when I'm looking at early debates that contain way too many contenders, I want to see how, you know, a huge jump like Kamala Harris had in this poll, which is, you know, Univision News, you know, they're of course quite liberal, but they're measuring Democrats here, and this is when you'll find partisan surveyors give up the news that the closest thing they can come to the truth. That's a 16 percentage point swing for Kamala Harris. That's remarkable. I would like to see what some more of the breakdown on African-American Democrat primary voters. I'd like to see what Republican swing voters, you know, not completely wedded to Trump, who they thought won and who made good points. People, I mean, the Democrat, you know, the general election nominee is going to have to peel away Trump voters, and those are the ones you got to look at. But for now, I thought that big swing in Hispanic voters toward Kamala Harris was pretty remarkable. And I'll tell you, I mean, there's going to be more debates. I'd like to see less microphones turned off like we saw with Yang and Marianne Williamson. I'm looking at this Yang guy. I thought yesterday he actually decried the beatdown that Andy Ngo got, the journalist for Quillette, who was beaten, had the crap beaten out of him in a Portland Antifa protest. John Yang actually said it's, you know, journalists should not be treated this way. And even though he wasn't, you know, jumping up and down like a Republican, he sure was defending Andy Ngo's human rights. So I'm paying more attention to him. I kind of like the poetry of Marianne Williamson, but Kamala Harris is who we got to watch. Julian Castro, I think, watch him. It's going to be very interesting as we go forward. I got a few more things to say. I want to take a quick break. Michael Caputo here on Still Standing. That is stillstandingpodcast.com. Still standing. Hey, welcome back to Still Standing. Thanks a lot for sticking around for this final segment. I wanted to thank, of course, all my executive producers, the people who back us up on Patreon, support us in other ways to make sure that Still Standing and keep moving forward. I want to thank my producer, the guy who actually bends the metal on this thing, Sean Dwyer. His patience, he's got the patience of Job with me. Try and keep me on task. You can forget about it. Of course, we have John Seifert, Henry Wotazek, Sonia Carlin, Susan Havey, Darcy Swenson, George Noonan, all executive producers. They're donating to cover our expenses over at patreon.com. Thomas Fulton, Stephen Flaminio, Daniel Markey, Jack Bromwich, Jordan Gostomski, Brian Pizdersky, Susan Stevens, Patty Freeling, Bill Grant, Greg Mumbaugh, Mark Berry, Gary Stokes, and of course, Rachel, Julie, and Samantha Lynn. Thank you all very much. All still standing executive producers, your help is really appreciated. And also, I believe a lot of us have been watching as we see these Democrats rolling into town down on the border to try to, you know, rile up their base with these tales of concentration camps holding children and parents and people who crossed into the United States illegally, and talking about them being tortured and the most outrageous things you can imagine. Of course, a lot of that coming from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, claiming people are drinking out of toilets. And of course, we see immediately that the plumbing inside most of these migrant or illegal immigrant headquarters and these detention centers trying to keep these people under wraps after they break the law and enter into our nation illegally. A lot of the plumbing there features one water feature in each cell or whatever it is that has a toilet attached to a drinking fountain. The drinking fountain is on top of the toilet, and there's many different people in these cells and these detention pens or whatever they are. And if you're going to cross across the border illegally, break the law and come into our country, I'm not going to promise you that you can drink fresh water separately from the water feature where you need to relieve yourself. You might need to actually drink water where it's provided. If it's not a healthy distance away from your crapper, I'm sorry. And I also got to tell you, having spent my time in Central America, where most of these people are coming from, if they're not coming from Africa or the Middle East, I've seen their toilets. I've seen their water fountains. I know every single person in those detention centers is thanking their lucky stars that they finally get to crap where it's clean and drink water that won't make them puke. Ocasio-Cortez is so crazy. She's nuts. I mean, I think, what do we have? Greg Stanton of Arizona, Democrat of Arizona, Representative Rashida Tlaib, who we all know, the Democrat of Michigan, who told, let's impeach the MFR, right? Representative Madeline Dean, Democrat of Pennsylvania, Representative Ayanna Pressley, Democrat of Massachusetts, Representative Mark Veazey from Texas, he said, you know, when he come out, he said people were telling, he heard stories that people were being denied showers. Lock them up there, Veazey. Wow, that's amazing. Joe Kennedy, a Democrat of Massachusetts, who said trust is broken between the agency, the Border Patrol, and Congress, the public. It's broken. Trust is broken. Lori Trahan, Democrat from Massachusetts, said she was horrified by the conditions she saw. And as a mother of two young daughters, she's disturbed by reports of children being denied basic necessities. Nothing she saw, just something she heard. Representative Sylvia Garcia, also from Texas, she didn't talk much about what she did on her visit. She posted about it, wanting to have a Border Patrol Facebook page, some nameless, anonymous Border Patrol Facebook page. She wants that investigated. Didn't talk much about her trip. She's from Texas. The people of Texas know all this social justice warrior exaggeration when they smell it. Of course, Representative Norma Torres was there, Democrat of California. You know, she was interviewed on Univision afterward, talking about the deplorable living conditions within the border facilities, which I guarantee you is the best living conditions these people have seen in weeks. Representative Pete Aguilar, Democrat of California. We have Representative Judy Chu, who did this yammering on and on statement on Twitter, on video. You know, she was really upset about this Facebook page with Border Patrol officers, namelessly, and membership there. Veronica Escobar, the Democrat of Texas. She went after that Facebook page. I tell you, if it weren't for the Facebook page, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of course, went after it. So did Julian Castro. But if it weren't for that Border Patrol Facebook page, which apparently has some sexist and racist and other things posted, things that don't scream out sickness or racism, but, you know, inappropriate otherwise, they're all complaining about a Facebook page when they spent their time traveling to Texas in order to see a border facility. I mean, they went all the way there to this place called Clint in El Paso, Texas, on Monday. And they made sure everybody knew about the poor living conditions inside, but also spend most of their time talking about a Facebook page they could have seen if they just stayed back in Washington. It didn't cost us all this money. This is outrageous in many different ways. First of all, many of these people are running for president, or certainly all are running for re-election. So this has some kind of cred with their base on the Democratic side, talking about disbanding ICE. These people wouldn't even vote for the money to solve this problem. What is it, $400 million to try to help this crisis at the border? They're all talking about this crisis at the border now, but yet 4 weeks ago, there was nothing going on there. Remember Jim Acosta from CNN? How he stood on the border in front of the fence and said, there's nothing going on here. There's no crisis. Now everything's a crisis there. And we got so many Democrats there, they're overwhelmed, right? Ocasio-Cortez comes out and says she felt like she was being threatened by the Border Patrol. For God's sake, would she please get over herself? She's the one talking about the toilet drinking water. It's like, would you please take a look at plumbing fixtures, lady? I can't believe how far these people have gone. And they're going to do much more of this hand-wringing at the border as they go along. And as one by one of them drops off, I mean, let's just face it, ladies and gentlemen. There are people among the Democrats that already should be talking about getting the hell out. But this border trips by office holders, actual, you know, congressmen, they have to show them this stuff if they want it. So the Democrats are organizing these things for presidential candidates who come from the House, and the loudest voices for immigration, for, you know, open borders in the House. They're all screaming about it, so much so that some of the other government facilities out there are being tarred with the same brush, falsely, of course. So, I mean, I actually got an email from a woman who runs a shelter in Homestead, Florida. I want to read this to you. She sent it out to a large list. I know her because of my time in Florida and things I've done there, but she clearly was targeting the media. Hello, Tatiana Anderson says. I'm writing to let you know that I am happy to help you if you've got any questions or need any information about Homestead Emergency Care Shelter. My role is to serve as a spokesman for Caliburn. This is the facility where she works. On background, some in the media may have been calling Homestead a detention center. That is incorrect. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, Clint in El Paso is a detention center. That's why this woman is sending out this email today at 10 a.m. trying to sidestep this story. That's, you know, she sees the big, huge rock rolling down the hill at her. It's not correct to call Homestead a detention center. This particular facility is not a detention center. That suggests punishment. That's not the case at Homestead, and therefore untrue. Homestead is an emergency influx shelter that is set up to provide housing and services to unaccompanied alien children until they can be legally and safely released to a parent, relative, or other sponsor, which is done as quickly as possible. As you discuss this matter and cover this story, please be mindful to refer to Homestead as what it is, an emergency care shelter, not a detention center. Please see the attached United States Health and Human Services fact sheet for further reference. These Democrats are running roughshod on the entire immigration system, so much so that the administrators of shelters, emergency shelters, designed to help children as they're transitioning to parents or relatives, has got to go out proactively and say, we are not a detention center. We are a shelter. Don't call us that. because she knows, Mrs. Anderson, that the next step is to call her a concentration camp. These emergency shelters are not detention centers. These detention centers aren't concentration camps. And these people who are calling these facilities concentration camps are not serious. None of them are. Not one of them. Least of all, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's got plumbing confusion, and the rest of them down there at Clinton yesterday. There's nothing more frustrating than an election season, ladies and gentlemen. There is nothing more frustrating. They're going to be out there wringing their hands in front of facilities by the wrong name every day until one by one by one these leftist candidates are run out of the office, run out of the campaign, or run out of the election, one by one by one. But one of them is going to be left standing, one of them at least, to represent the socialist omission and innuendo champions that one by one by one dropped out of the race. Healthcare, free healthcare for illegal aliens. This is going to be a fool's errand, all of it, because anyone who advocates for free healthcare for illegal aliens while the rest of America is paying through the nose for it, you're going to lose. As President Trump said after the campaign, it's over. The big winner of these debates and the big winner of all these hand-wringing trips to the border is Donald J. Trump, President of the United States. That's exactly who's climbing ahead as these fools stand there wringing their hands in front of the detention centers. Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Remember, you can catch us at stillstandingpodcast.com. Again, you can subscribe at iTunes. You can donate at patreon.com. Or you can subscribe and get an email whenever an alert whenever one of these things is put up there, one of these episodes. We also do video and blogging at stillstandingpodcast.com.